I sat in on a conference that he had one time when the president had authorized grain sales to the Soviet Union. There was a problem inside the Maritime Union and the Soviet leadership, and the firm represented Cargill, also Continental Grain Company. I remember some of their executives came out to talk with Mr. Nixon, and I sat in his office. He had a corner office and took notes. Mr. Nixon listened to them, and he said, well, here's what your problem is. He rattled off the names of these mid-level Soviet bureaucrats that he had met, and he said, well, this is the problem. At that time, Mr. Khrushchev had not been deposed, and so Khrushchev was known as a kind of a semi-reformer. He said, you have to remember that there may be reform elements in the Soviet leadership at the top, but beneath them, they're all Stalinists. When Mr. Khrushchev was forced to resign, Mr. Nixon made a trip to Moscow, I think, in 65, and he found out where Mr. Khrushchev's Moscow apartment was. He had his driver take him over there, and maid answered the door. Of course, she said Khrushchev wasn't there, and Mr. Nixon wrote him a note that he'd come by and sorry he missed him and hoped he was doing well. An unusual man.
Did he talk politics then with you? Did you have any feeling that he would ever go back into the game again?
No, not really. There was a movement in early 64 that, well, maybe the Republican Party should nominate him instead of Governor Rockefeller or Senator Goldwater. That didn't last very long. After the New Hampshire primary, when Ambassador Lodge, who had run with Mr. Nixon in 1960, won that write-in victory. But Mr. Nixon didn't really have much respect for the political skills of Lodge. I think he sensed that the selection of Lodge in 60 had been a mistake. Lodge was not a very vigorous campaigner, had a reputation taking a nap every day. I never asked Mr. Nixon if that was true, but Rosemary Wood said it was true. I did ask Mr. Nixon one thing. I said, sir, is it true that in your 1950 race against Helen Geoghegan Douglas, that Senator Kennedy, then Congressman Kennedy, gave you $1,000. He said, well, no, that's not quite true. He said what he did was Jack brought to my office a $1,000 contribution from his father, the ambassador, and shook my hand and wished me well. You asked me about Mr. Nixon. I would just share two things with you. One time, all the ladies, and this was very unusual, the three women that worked in the office went out to lunch. Usually they didn't. They just ate lunch at their desk, but maybe one of them had a birthday or something. So I stayed in the office, and of course Mr. Nixon stayed in the office, and the phone rang. I answered, and I said, Mr. Nixon's office. And this very officious female voice said, the director is calling for Mr. Nixon. And for a moment, I almost asked, who is the director? But something told me that I shouldn't. It's just instinct. So I said, one moment, please. I got up from Shelley's desk, went to Mr. Nixon. I said, sir, the director is on the phone for you. Mr. Nixon had his feet up on the desk. He swerved around, picked up the phone. He said, Edgar, how are you? Well, of course, it was J. Edgar Hoover. So I'm glad I didn't ask who the director was. I asked Earl Mazo one time, that last night I was in New York, Earl took me to dinner at the New York Times employee cafeteria. And I asked him if he thought Mr. Nixon would be president, and if so, what kind of president. He gave me his answer, which was obviously 100% accurate. Mr. Mazo had a reading of the president that few people had. He studied him very carefully.
What year was that?
That was 64.
Oh, 64.
64.
All right. So again, in between his being defeated and then running for president.
Right. I don't think in 64 anybody ever thought, first of all, the only Republican that had ever been renominated after losing was Tom Dewey. But there was a hint. One day, Raymond Moley came up to see Mr. Nixon. Moley was an early member of the Brain Trust of President Franklin Roosevelt, turned conservative, left, and was then the prize columnist at Newsweek magazine. Mr. Moley's column appeared every week on the last page of Newsweek. Lots of people read him. He had an enormous influence, and he came in see Mr. Nixon, and they were in there about 45 minutes, and Mr. Nixon buzzed out. One of the ladies told me that he wanted to see me. So I grabbed my pad and went in the office, and Ray Moley was sitting there talking to him, and Mr. Nixon introduced me, said, Stephen, I'd like for you to prepare a memorandum on how many men have been renominated for president after having been defeated for president. And while you're at it, why don't you add anybody that's been defeated for state office and nominated for president? Of course, I could see where that was going. So I said, yes, sir. So I prepared the memorandum. I still have a copy of it today. It was one page. After I gave it to him about 3 weeks later, with the wording slightly rearranged, there it was in Ray Moley's column. Actually, there were quite a few men who got a second chance at being president, and I think I found four that had been defeated for state office and nominated for president. John Quincy Adams had run for governor of Massachusetts and been defeated. Franklin Roosevelt had run for the nomination for United States Senator and been defeated. See, here's the thing that people forget about Richard Nixon. In the entire history of the United States, no person served in national, elected, federal office longer than Richard Nixon. The second is Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Only Franklin Roosevelt and Richard Nixon appeared on the national ballot 5 times. Mr. Roosevelt 4 times for president and once for vice president. Mr. Nixon 2 times for vice president and 3 times for president. Yeah, he was a fascinating man to work for.